super committee's failure could also translate as a failure to extend the payroll tax cuts. They're due to expire at the end of the year, and many look to the super committee to include an extension of the payroll tax cuts in their plan. Now, here to tell us if tax hikes are inevitable are the Freedom Fighters, radio host Nancy Skinner, Reason Magazine editor-in-chief Matt Welch, and Fox Business energy analyst Phil Flynn. Nancy, first to you, what do you think?
Well, it's funny how you call extending the payroll tax cuts a tax hike, okay? You know, the whole idea of the Bush tax cuts, they had a sunset clause, EMAC, and what is that? That means that if we have deficits, we're going to go back to where they were. Now, so what's the difference between that sunset clause and what we did with payroll tax cuts to allow people to have more consumer spending in their pocket, which is 80% of GDP? What is the difference? You want to keep tax cuts extended for 2 years on the top 1%, but when it comes to payroll tax, all of a sudden you're going to scare the American public.
Okay, no, we're not scaring the American public. Hang on, sit tight. No, Nancy, you're making an important point there, and I appreciate it. When we talk about the payroll tax cut going away, Phil Flynn, that essentially means we are going to pay more in taxes. And if we're going to raise taxes on the upper bracket, Phil, to your mind, have you seen any lockbox erected by Congress to store those revenues from the tax hikes so they can spend it wisely and appropriately down there in Congress? Bill Flynn?
Wisely and appropriately in Congress in the same sentence? I don't think so. You know, I mean, the bottom line is that this is a tax cut that actually helped all Americans. It really was. I mean, it put more money in the average American's pocket. And that's what everybody's screaming for, you know, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. And it, because of this super committee, they're going to go away. That's going to be less money in the economy, and that's it. Now, if you compromise that on top of that, and, you know, you let the Bush tax cuts expire, this is going to create even more of an issue. So what we're basically doing is we're taking more money out of the economy, putting it into the government coffers, and you know what they're going to end up doing it with. I don't. But
Matt, Nancy makes an important point. Look, the payroll tax cuts, you know, people want that money back in their pocket. But the issue is, I mean, I don't want to get into a fight about the Bush tax cuts because who knows if they're going to expire. But really the issue is, can we do tax reform? Can we do it adequately with the U.S. government saying, look, we are going to stop spending. We are going to stop, out of control, reckless spending at a time when we're looking at Harry Reid in Congress and we're looking at Charlie Rangel. Can they do tax reform? That's like putting the cat among the pigeons. I mean, can they do it? Can we get it done correctly down there in Congress?
Absolutely not. There's no chance. There's not a single signal coming out of Capitol Hill that real tax reform is on the table. And in fact, this payroll tax cut, which did put more money in people's pockets, but it's also a sign of one of the problems. The problem is that we're addicted to these sort of short-term measures. We haven't passed a budget in 2.5 years, but we can do these little short-term things. They don't help the economy. Short-term tax cuts don't allow people to plan. It shows that we jury-rig the tax code every political season as we see fit, instead of simplifying, getting rid of things like the mortgage interest deduction, simplifying and flattening,
right,
and then reducing. And specifically reducing government so that we can get the actual payment for the government that we have in line with the government that we get.
All right, gang. Nancy, final word.
So you would be against increasing the wealthiest tax cuts for the 1%.
Personally, I don't believe you raise taxes at all until you rein in spending. But that's for argument for another day. And we'll talk about trickle-down Obamanomics for another day. But here's another topic for you. It's a conservative candidate's worst nightmare, the 2012 GOP race. Under the microscope now more than ever, the super committee's failure means Congress now faces $1.2 trillion in automatic spending cuts that will hit the Defense Department harder than any other agency. So now the GOP field must choose between the party's top causes: shrink the size of government or shrink the military budget. Can conservative stalwarts in Congress stomach the idea of real fiscal responsibility? What do you think? Take that, Phil.
Well, I think the bottom line is that it's going to come down to the election. But, you know, the same issue goes back to the tax issue that we were just talking about. The bottom line is, how do you fix the tax system? And, you know, Nancy's point that we should just, you know, tax the richest 1%, that isn't going to solve the problem. There's not enough money to do that. The bottom line is you need structural reform. That's why Mr. Cain originally took off on the Republican field, because he has a plan. Whether it's good or bad, it's across the board.
Okay,
that's what we
me.
Need is tax reform.
You know, Matt, U.S. military spending, by some research, accounts for 43% of military spending for the entire world, $724 billion in 2012. I never heard of any of the military contractors like Lockheed ever needing, or Boeing, get, you know, or Grumman having to get a government bailout. They got that tin cup going. We get it. I've got soldiers in my family. We want to support our military. I'm not saying that. I'm saying there's got to be some way to get some, you know, savings out of the defense budget. No, Matt?
Absolutely, and it really shows that there's a huge gap between conservative and Republican rhetoric and their actual record of governance. They don't want to cut military spending. Ron Paul is the only candidate who is serious, or a serious candidate who is serious about cutting military spending, which he rightly shows is different than defense spending. We've been funding our wars through emergency supplementals since 2002, and just shoving anything under these bills in the name of supporting the troops. If any Republican out there wants to be actually serious about this topic and have any credibility after 8 years of a terrible George W. Bush government expansion, then you have to cut military spending, period.
All right, Nancy Skinner, do you agree with Ron Paul? We got to pare back the defense budget.
I'm just going to have fun watching the GOP candidates have to choose between two sacred cows. Thank goodness there's not a third, or Rick Perry would be in a lot of trouble.
Well, do you agree with Ron Paul?
Because
no, answer the question, Nancy. Do you agree with Ron Paul?
Yes, absolutely. Our military budget should be cut. We don't need bases continuing in Japan and Germany. And there are outdated systems like Trident missiles and all kinds of too many aircraft carriers. When we live in an asymmetrical new warfare environment, absolutely. But you know what? You got to choose. They want to hold on the tax cuts for the rich, and they don't want to cut the military.
Nancy, are you ever for across-the-board spending cuts? Would you ever agree, Nancy? You got to cut spending before you ask for one more nickel out of the American people. Nancy Skinner.
That's what this whole super committee was supposed to do. Come together and find cuts in every area of government.
Eureka! Nancy Skinner agrees.
Don't
raise taxes. Stop taking money from the American people. You cut spending first. We're going to leave it there. Nancy, I gotcha. Next time around, you're going to get me back. I know it. Next time. Next time, Nancy Skinner. Stay tuned. The Freedom Fighters return later in the show to grill the TSA on the eve of a very big travel holiday. But first, we will tell you if the state you live in is the least free in the nation. That's next. Don't go away. All right, we've got the biggest travel weekend of the year coming up, and the TSA really feeling the heat. The Air Transport Association predicts 2% fewer people will fly during the Thanksgiving holiday because of the TSA's invasive and time-consuming security tactics. So, is it time to reprivatize airport security or do smarter profiling? Our Freedom Fighters return. Radio host Nancy Skinner, Fox Business energy analyst Phil Flynn, and Reason Magazine editor-in-chief Matt Welch. Phil, first to you. We know that there's been a real problem with racial profiling. We're not talking about that. We're talking about smart profiling. And I got to tell you, what's been going on is ever since 9/11, the Fourth Amendment has been really pounded into the sand, that's probably an overstatement, by the airport security, unreasonable searches. You know, what we're seeing pre-9/11, what we're seeing now, pre-9/11, would have been unreasonable. Now it's reasonable. People have become accustomed to it. Are you worried about that?
I am worried about that. And to be honest with you, I do think that we do have this fear here about racial profiling and the difference between smart profiling. And that's the bottom line here. Listen, you know what? Right now, you know, we have this total massive search of everybody that doesn't make a lot of sense. I think we need to train our people to realize it would be smart profiling. And that doesn't mean you would just, you know, take one group and profile them. You have to use experience. You have to use these smarts. And you have to change it up as well, because you've got to keep the terrorists off guard. If they're expecting you to profile one group, you've got to go the other way. I think the bottom line is we've got to give better training and more confidence in our security to make sure that they're doing things right.
Matt, you know, to Phil's point, there's no going back once privacy rights and other rights are eroded. Society tends to grow accustomed to it. Just take a look at what's going on in Venezuela or Cuba. And what Phil is talking about with smart profiling is you ask questions such as this of passengers. Did you buy a one-way ticket? Did you pay for it in cash? Did you just buy it yesterday? Have you spent the last 6 months in Afghanistan? That's smart profiling. Should we be doing that, Matt Welch?
We should be doing more of that, and we should also, after abolishing the TSA to begin with and devolving this to airports and airlines, and preferably privatized airports, but beyond all that, we should have an opt-in program for people who are happy to subject themselves to thorough background screening, to all kinds of pretty intrusive measures in order to go faster through the lines. There are a lot of people who would willingly do that. Think of airline pilots, you know, people who want to get whisked through, who are willing to go through. That would ease the choke points of lines to begin with, and then we can start winnowing down so that we're not searching two-year-olds, we're not searching 90-year-olds, and then we can start asking
Nancy
smarter
Skinner,
questions.
Nancy Skinner, is privatization the way to go?
Judge McDonald, I'll meet you 50-50
on this. That's an overstatement. Go ahead.
There is no way that we should privatize it. I do agree with you on the
smart. But why? Why shouldn't we privatize?
Because there's not profit motive in protecting. The airlines don't have profit motive. On the smart technology side of it, just asking somebody questions means they could lie. Oh, no, I haven't been to Afghanistan. You want to hear real smart technology? The number 17th fastest growing company in Fortune magazines this issue is called EPC, Electronic Product Codes. And they are using RFID technology, infrared technology that's on your passport, and it's got to match your eyeballs or your tag,
oh, good
or you
God.
Don't
oh,
get
wait,
through
all
a door.
Right, we get
it's
it.
Not
all right.
Intrusive.
Phil
smart
Flynn,
technology.
Should we be, you know, Americans are getting zapped with all sorts of radio waves, and, you know, I'm not saying it's dangerous radiation. We just don't know it yet with what's going on with the scanners. I mean, is this the way to go? Do you think that's too intrusive, or is it the way to go? Do you agree with what Nancy's saying?
Well, I do agree with Nancy to a certain extent. I think that technology is going to make us better, to be honest with you. I think using technology for safety is the way to go, absolutely. But at the same time, you know, when we talk about privatizing, listen, bottom line is after September 11th, we realize that it is the federal government's job to keep the airs safe over America. And to be honest with you, I would, you know, if the government wants to privatize it, it definitely has to be monitored very carefully, because ultimately every American has an interest. It's not just the people getting on that plane.
You know, Matt, what do you make of Nancy's point that if you just do smart profiling, people would just lie? They'll say, no, I didn't pay in cash. No, I didn't buy the ticket just yesterday. What do you make of that?
Well, I make of it more than I do the idea that we should all subject ourselves to RFID technology and have our eyeballs scanned at the airport. I'm hoping not to live in that.
They're on every passport
in that universe. However, yes, of course people lie, but there's also, we have knowledge of people. We have stamps in their passports. We know a lot more about what you and I have traveled recently than we actually should feel comfortable with. So, and you know, trained people in airport situations can tell when someone's lying a little bit. You know, you quicken up,
you know,
you
Nancy,
blink a lot. There are physical tells.
Right, I got it. Nancy, now to the point, to Matt's good point about the stamps in the airport. I mean, listen, nobody in their right mind would agree that racial profiling is in any way in keeping with the 14th Amendment, meaning equal protection under the law. I mean, that we knew that was a problem since 1798 with the Alien and Sedition Act, when there was racial profiling going on back then. This country is well aware of the problems with racial profiling. Would the looking at the stamps and a passport, could anybody conjure up an argument saying that, look, this is equivalent to racial profiling, and then you're in the thicket again?
Well, you know what? A lot of business people do not get a stamp when they go to Israel if they travel in the Middle East, because then they're not allowed in the Middle East or they're targeted. So the Israelis will do that on purpose. So you can't even say there's human error, there's bribery, there's corruption all over the world. Just having a stamp like
but
everyone's
Nancy Skinner,
do it
getting back to your point about Israel, hang on. Has Phil Flynn actually? Phil, take this. Has El Al Airlines out of Israel had any problems with terrorist activity on their airlines?
They have not. I mean, they have one of the best track records in the world. You know, the question is, do we want to go that far? You know, and that's one of the issues that we have to worry about. And there is that fine line. I mean, that goes back to, you know, to the beginning of this country and the Constitution. There is that fine line. I believe that there is a way to do it safely. We do have a responsibility to do it. And I think using new technology is the way to do it. It may be a little bit of invasive, but if you think it is, you can always take the bus.
So, Phil, do you have brown eyes? They're probably going to turn blue with those infrared scanners that Nancy's for.
It's those beady eyes. Those beady eyes you got to watch out for. Those are the guys that need the scan.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Oh, little eyeball profiling. Love you, Phil Flynn.
Hey.
And Matt and Nancy are always terrific. The Freedom Fighters, always smart bunch there. Now, next up, if you can't beat them, pay them. We tell you the costly way that police in Los Angeles are getting rid of the troublemaking Occupy Wall Street protesters, those pests out there. More with the Freedom Fighters, that's next. And by the way, I was just kidding about calling them pests. Nah. The Occupy Wall Street movement has erupted in major cities from coast to coast. And in their more than two-month-long movement, the police continue to struggle with how to get rid of protesters blocking traffic and business. Now Los Angeles is trying a different approach. They're offering the protesters a package of incentives if it means they'll get off the streets. The Freedom Fighters back with me now, Nancy Skinner, Matt Welch, and Phil Flynn. You know, Nancy, what this involves is basically giving the protesters downtown office space and farmland in an attempt to get them to abandon their camp. What do you make of that?
Well, you know what? I think actually for the 99ers, Occupy, it's a good deal, because how long can you stay on the streets without it sort of withering away? And they need to organize, mobilize, use technology, go the route that most political movements do, software programs, social media. Michael Moore is in my home state right now, our home state of Michigan and Flint. Michael Moore should start Channel 99 and let these people talk. Why just stay on the streets and have cops pepper spray you?
Matt Welch, here's the issue. Yeah, it's a good deal. Taxpayers are going to be footing the bill there. And this is basically a district for, you know, protesters. And the fear is they'll never go away.
You know, I'm from L.A. I've been defending L.A. against bad Woody Allen jokes for 30 years. And this is just embarrassing. For crying out loud, if they're trespassing, if they're camping illegally, ask them to leave. Hopefully don't pepper spray them in the face or do all the kinds of terrible police abuses that we've seen. But for crying out loud, don't give them cookies. You know, they're protesting. In L.A., recent TV has done video work on this. It is a pro-government protester. The L.A. City Council loves those guys and have been patting them on the head for 2 months now. And then we see just sort of the devolution of an entire city's political culture. It's embarrassing.
You know, Phil Flynn, to Matt's point here, you know, look at the UC Davis, you know, pepper spray incident. That was excessive police force. Yeah. That's a separate issue.
Absolutely.
But what we're talking about here is, you know, college administrators, and here we have a shot of what's going on. I mean, that was just a dreadful, excessive use of police force. Libertarians like myself do not like to see that. But the real fear on the part of academics and college campuses is that the occupations will settle in, and it's very difficult to get them to move on and move out. I mean, even at Woodstock, people knew when to leave.
They did. You know, the bottom line, I'm going to take another take on this. You know, I think it's a good deal for the government. You know, probably it's going to cost them less money to put these guys out on a farm somewhere, get them out of the downtown area, give them some stuff. And the government's probably pretty sneaky. I mean, if you look at the history of the government, you know, look what they did with the Native Americans. You know, they put them on a reservation, put them out there. Before you know it, they took that over. You know, before you know it, they'll be occupying Wyoming instead of Los Angeles.
Yeah, Nancy, and then you have an Occupy casino on that. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe they could fund their protest movement that way. I am joking. I am just joking. But Nancy Skinner, to Phil's point, is this a conscious move by the government to better police the protesters by putting them on land? Are you worried about that?
No, you know, and I think it's ridiculous, and it's really offensive to the 99ers. This is 99% of the public that we're talking about, EMAC, and they are there because they don't have jobs to go to. For Newt Gingrich to say, take a bath and get a job, of all people, is offensive.
These
are people who have been trying to get jobs. And so to say that you're going to put 99% of us out on agricultural lands and stick us in Wyoming and get rid of us and just the 1% own the country is ridiculous and offensive, Phil.
What do you make of that, Phil?
Well, you know, the bottom line here is I think we're taking these guys too seriously, to be honest with you. You know, and I think if they didn't get the media coverage, they'd go away. I mean, they don't have a centralized plan. They're angry. I understand that. But what's your plan? What do you have other than anger and screaming? Is that very productive? I don't care. You want to protest here or there. What is your plan?
Stimulus. Repeal the Segal Act. Repeal the Segal Act.
Well, that's your opinion. I'm reading
package.
Signs. Right, I'm reading signs every day that says everything else.
Matt Welch, I want you to take the final word. You know, let's face it, the Occupy Wall Street movement, you know, they've had, you know, beefs and gripes that people, the American people would agree with. And, you know, K Street is dominated by finance and Wall Street, lobbyists and all of that. That's a big problem. But when does their voice not become effective?
I think we kind of crossed that Rubicon. They changed the conversation for my money. Obviously, being libertarian, I'm happy if they focus especially on corporatism. But now it's a question of there's just clashes with the police at this point, and the American public is turning their public opinion against them.
Well,
I think more and more going forward.
Thank you to my freedom fighters. Always terrific. I'm Liz McDonald filling in for the judge.